Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I'm on my own today, so no sidekicks. Everybody's unavailable, but that's okay because there are some cool stories that we'll go over. However, first, I want to talk about our great guest. That's Martin Willis, and he has a podcast called Podcast UFO. He's fairly new to the UFO field, but I met him in North Carolina at the Center for UFO Research's symposium just a couple weekends ago, and it was a lot of fun. We had conversed a little bit prior, but really cool guy. Not only is he into UFOs and do we have similar perspectives, but he, in his real life, works in the antique business, which I find exciting because I find antiques fascinating, and actually it's a hobby I hope to develop. Right now it only goes so far as watching Antiques Roadshow, another antique show. Anyway, we'll be talking to Martin in just a little bit about how he got into this, some of his favorite interviews, some of the compelling information he's come across, and personal experiences. However, before that, let's get into the news. So the news from last week, there was a lot on Roswell, and I think that has to do mainly with the fact that Jason and I were out there, and that really gets people excited, the whole world, where Jason and I go and what we do. Actually, it was Google. I don't think anybody cares about what we do, but they care about what Google does. Anytime Google puts up a little, you know, and I can't think of the word of what they do, they put up on their homepage the little thingies that are focused on something. Today's Rembrandt, actually, and his birthday. But last week they did a little UFO game on their front page in remembrance of the Roswell UFO crash. So it's kind of neat. And, of course, then everybody's got to write the Google Roswell story, and they did. So there was news all over the place on Roswell and pros and cons. Of course, the mainstream's mostly going into cons, but there was a lot of interesting stuff and a lot of stories there. One of the stories, though, from the conference is kind of sad, and that is the seemingly human abduction of an alien baby. Things are a little backwards in this one. It's actually a mural they have out there in Roswell, and it has this alien family, you know, like their UFO is crashed or having some problems, and they're like, whoa, some humans come up and are being hospitable and offering them some apple pies, and they're kind of like, hey, what are you doing, you crazy humans? Keep your distance. But this mural, which is a large mural that you see when you're coming into Roswell and people stop and take pictures. But of this alien family, there was a little alien baby on a post there, and someone stole it. So that wasn't very nice. So there's some big crime wave going through Roswell, New Mexico there with the alien baby being lost. They say they're going to replace it, and they're going to put more security around this mural in the future. But if you have any knowledge of where this alien baby could be, please let us know. And we'll let Roswell know. And you can, you know, submit it anonymously. Maybe you are the perpetrator and you have this alien baby in your room right now and you're feeling guilty as I review this whole story. Let us know, and, you know, we won't let the authorities know. We'll just return the baby to its rightful owner. So some Roswell news. And speaking of Roswell, we have a couple videos. I have a video of the parade on my Facebook, which you can go check out. And then also Jason is doing this vlog for Geek and Sundry. on UFOs, and you can go to any of our Facebooks and see information on that. But you can go vote for it. And if you go vote, then they'll regularly let Jason submit these vlogs on UFOs and what we're doing with Open Minds. And he's got some really cool pictures and video that we took from Roswell on there, too. So go check it out. Otherwise, we have a few UFO videos and pictures I think people will like. So lots of cool stuff going up on the website. And today, there's some big stories that we're going to be posting. So we have Maureen and Jason with Spacing Out went and interviewed some bands, and in one of these interviews, the gentleman said he was friends with Sammy Hagar, at least talked to Sammy Hagar about UFOs, and so we're working on a story because Ryan Adams, another rocker, says he saw a UFO, and so we're going to put together a whole story that Maureen's working on, and we'll be posting that pretty soon on Ryan Adams and his sighting. And then also the interview that Maureen and Jason got with this this kid at this little music festival recently here in Arizona. And then, of course, everybody's wondering about the ex-Knicks player Baron Davis and his abduction story. Well, maybe you haven't even heard of this yet, but this famous basketball player said he was abducted by aliens a couple weeks ago. So we'll have more on that on our website, too. So go to openminds.tv for all of this great news, videos, and, of course, lots of exclusive stuff from Open Minds. Pretty awesome. We are keeping very, very busy. In fact, I'm not quite sure we're going to have a show next week because we're going to be at MUFON this weekend in Las Vegas, the MUFON Symposium. So if you're there, come and say hi. We'll all be there. We're taking everybody driving out to Las Vegas. It's not too far, and we're going to be out there talking about Open Minds and selling some magazines and some DVDs and just saying hi and hanging out with people, and also, of course, doing some interviews of some of the speakers so that we can get those online so you can see those soon. However, without further ado, let's go ahead and talk to Martin about Podcast UFO. I am excited and happy to have a newfound friend on the show, Martin Willis, the host of Podcast UFO. Hello, Martin.
Hey, Alejandro. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. It was great meeting you recently.
Yeah, that was really neat to be able to see you there and get to talk and know each other and kind of hit it off. And I think you're involved with a lot of interesting things.
Yes, I'm loving what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things that I find interesting you're involved in is not UFO related, which is antiques.
That's right. I wonder how many listeners you have are involved with the antiques. Probably it's kind of a small percentage.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of laughing, and I think I've admitted this on the show before, that one of my guilty pleasures is if you can call it that, because it's kind of the opposite. It's where it's like nothing that's guilty usually, because it's kind of boring, is getting up on Saturday, making some eggs, and watching the Antiques Roadshow.
Yeah, I work with one of the people on that.
That's what you said.
Yeah, he's a character.
That is really cool. I love those guys. And I would get all excited. I was kind of a little fan geek, even though, of that new show,
Market Warriors.
Yeah.
I believe it's canceled already, but
that's such a bummer because I loved it, and I was tech-tweeting those guys, hey, good show, I love this part or that part, but not enough antique geeks out there to perpetuate.
Well, I'll tell you, there's so many stories to tell in that. I do another podcast called Antique Auction Forum, and actually after I saw you in North Carolina, I went north to Thomas Jefferson's Monticello.
Oh,
and
cool.
Interviewed the senior curator there. That was a blast looking all through that house.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, we're probably boring our UFO people.
I was thinking the same thing.
Because they want to hear all about UFOs, and they'll complain to me, oh, come on, guys. So let's talk UFOs. So what got you interested in this field?
Well, actually, I was working in the antique field in California, and I actually was working on Merv Griffin's estate out there in the Carmel Valley area. And when I was I was relaxing, and actually, it's kind of a funny story. It's really a boring sighting if you really want to know the truth, but I was sitting in a hot tub and by myself relaxing. I wasn't drinking or anything like that. And all of a sudden, a perfectly shaped disc just glided right over me, and it had like a silvery glow. I would say if you held a silver dollar extending your arm all the way out, that's about the size of it.
Wow.
And it sort of had a little bluish tint. It's kind of hard to describe. Now, this was around 8 o'clock, so there was still a little bit of daylight. It was dusk. And so it stopped, and then it just sort of veered toward Monterey. So I jumped out of the hut. I said, I was talking to myself and just saying, I can't believe this. I just can't believe this, you know. So I always was really interested. And, you know, but that was really the first thing I ever saw. You know, I mean, I always thought that, you know, all these people weren't making this up.
Uh-huh.
You know, everyone that I had heard talk about them. So I ran in the guest house where I was staying and contacted the Monterey Police Department. I got a dispatcher and I told her about the sighting, and I said, it's heading toward Monterey. I just want to know, has anybody else seen it? So she treated me with a bit of sarcasm, put me on hold for 15 minutes, and I hung up.
Wow.
And I finally got sick of it. I went into work. I told one person at the auction gallery I was working at about the situation. She told someone else. Everyone started teasing me. So I kept quiet about it for several years. This was in 2006. So I'm a newbie, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, it just opened my eyes where something's going on. And I don't know how that could have been explained. You know, I mean, I was totally baffled. So I was on a friend's podcast. He does comedy. And I brought up the situation. He teased me as well. But then he talked to me just after that and said, something has made this podcast take off. And he had his podcast transcribed and everything. So he got back to me, and the key word was UFO.
Wow.
So I said, well, you know, maybe it would be a good idea to start a UFO podcast. And I'll tell you, it's one of the best ideas I ever had. I've been having so much fun, and it's been fascinating talking to all these very interesting people, and not the wackos that, you know, a lot of people think on the outside that, you know, who's involved in UFOs. There's some very intelligent, open-minded thinking people in this, and it's been really enjoyable.
Yeah, you know what? When I first got involved, I found that as well, that there were a lot of nice, intelligent people.
Yeah. Yep. And then, you know, one thing leads into another, and you hear these amazing stories,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, which I don't think can be explained. I think anyone that really thinks they can explain it probably doesn't know any more than we do.
Yeah, I agree. I kind of have that rule of thumb, and I hear others say it, that if someone says they've got it figured out, they probably have the least figured out than the many who say, I've been doing this for decades and I don't know what the hell's going on.
Yeah, those are the ones you listen to.
Right. What have been some of the more eye-opening things that people have shared with you?
Well, you know, there's the people that I'm sure you've talked to, like Travis Walton and people like that. And you know, just sitting face-to-face with someone when you're talking to them about such a bizarre experience and just looking at them and realizing that they got to be telling the truth. You know, mm-hmm. there's no sign of any lying there going on, you know, with the eye contact or any of the signals you get from people that may be lying. That, of course, probably all your listeners know that story, the Travis Walton
mm-hmm.
incident. That was pretty exciting. And, you know, just to hear some of the different theories, there's a gentleman named Thomas Fusco, F-U-S-C-O, and he's out of Florida. And he had this really amazing theory. I believe I talked to you about it,
mm-hmm.
involving what he thinks, if there was no such thing as gravitons, it would certainly explain a lot of paranormal all the way across the board. He was really an interesting person to talk to. And, you know, the different ideas and propulsion. And, you know, I just really have talked to so many people that you have. So I'm sure we share, you know, a lot of the same.
Yeah. Now, with the Walton case, I kind of feel like you, and that's what's kind of exciting and great about his case. And I think a lot of people I've seen, I felt this way, it sounds like you did as well, are more enthusiastic about the case after they meet him.
Yes. Yeah, it solidifies it. You know, and I felt the same thing, not that Rendlesham Force was never pretty solid, but after listening to Charles Hult, when I was at the symposium with you, that just felt really solid as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think these are two examples of just grounded people who you get the sense that they're very genuine.
Right. And going back to Travis Walton, you know, I really truly believe he wishes that whole incident never happened to him.
Right. Which you see through the years with different cases.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially with the more credible ones. Yeah, they're like, man, I wish I never would have opened my mouth about that one.
Right. And, you know, Betty and Barney Hill, you know, through Kathleen Martin, said that's basically how they felt as well.
Mm-hmm. Looking at when you, you know, had your sighting, and did you start to then do some research in the field also?
Well, it's kind of lame that this happened, and I didn't even think about going online. I don't know what my thinking was. Like, okay, who do I report it to? Do I go and talk to the Air Force or what? I had no idea. So I never really started getting into any of the research until, you know, a number of years later. It's kind of like after the ridicule that I got, I just kind of kept it to myself and kind of pushed it away.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say any research that I have done, it's only been about maybe three, four years that I've really looked into it.
Mm-hmm. And across that, what have you found to be the most credible?
As far as incidents go?
Yeah.
Well, you know, a lot of the standbys, you know, one of them is, of course, the Roswell incident. You know, I think that, you know, the fact that it was printed that, you know, from the Army Air Force that they actually stated that they found a flying disc, I don't think that could ever be retracted. You know, you can't unring that bell, you know, and I think that's a very solid case. That's just so surrounded with so many myths and things. And, you know, speaking of that, I may stray a little bit, but, you know, the myths kind of get mixed in with reality, and it really makes it hard to tell how to sort things out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, for instance, the Dulce underground base, you know, all these things, they almost become almost factual. It's kind of like in American history, there's a lot of things that we think are just facts, but, you know, they're just like that, you know, they just get carried through the generations and things changed and altered. And, you know, it's so hard to tell what is actually factual.
Right. It's kind of, and it is a little concerning because it kind of harkens back to that saying that if you tell a lie enough times, you know, it becomes the truth. And that happens a lot in this field where these mythologies get repeated and everybody takes them for granted. And mm-hmm. we're doing more of this, but I found that when you look at the roots of these mythologies, you find out, they're not really based off of very much.
Right. Yep. And they just get repeated over, like you said, in the internet. Just kind of, you know, sparks the fire even more.
How do you deal with that as someone looking for guests? How do you what is your philosophy in approaching who you're going to have on?
That's a really good question because it has changed a bit. You know, when I first started, I didn't really know, you know, who is considered, you know, like way out there, maybe fringe, and who was not. And then Robert Hastings came along. I interviewed him, and I felt he was very solid and really enjoyed talking to him. And I said, "Hey, Robert, do you mind if I pass, you know, some people's names in front of you before I invite them on as guests?" And he said, "Absolutely." So he's been kind of helping me, you know, along the way. You know, I had someone that was, say, very interesting that kind of goes way off the deep end recently. And you know, I just let them talk and let them say what they're going to say. And but I don't exactly chime in and agree, you know, with what they're saying.
Right.
So, you know, it's still, it's funny. I would say the person the furthest out on the fringe, I thought, you know, I get a lot of downloads.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of followers of some people.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've done a few debates that, you know, debating UFOs is not an easy thing when you're up against Seth Shostak. He was pretty sharp.
Yeah.
And I had someone on from another Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. I had someone on from that. And I've had three skeptics on so far. And, you know, just I like to hear everybody's side of the story. And, you know, some of them make some really good points, but, you know, they don't cover them all. You
right.
Know?
Yeah. What you're saying here makes me think of a lot of different things. But I guess when it comes to the skeptics I find, and I think your opinion sounds like it'd be somewhat important because you have an appreciation for skeptics, it sounds like, which I do too, because I think you know, I want to be challenged to make sure that I don't have any gaps in my logic and that I'm basing, you know, what I'm looking at off of reality or what I feel is such. But a lot of the skeptics, yeah, will gloss over some of the harder points. I mean, all of them do, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that particular podcast I did with Seth Shostak, that was a lot of downloads in that one as well. And, you know, he said I asked him what he would need for evidence, and he said he would need a flying saucer in the Smithsonian Museum. That's
right.
What he would need. That's the tangible he would need.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's, you know, a bit much. And, you know, they're very, the whole thing is so, what am I trying to say? Just, it's something that happens that we never have enough time to really explore what it is. When someone has a sighting, you know, you just can't grasp that evidence, even if it's video or photos. And, you know, you can't really, if the photo is too good, it looks fake.
Right.
You know? And, so I don't know what the answers are.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Getting back to the philosophy of how you choose your guests and that sort of thing. When, you know, you said that you had this guest on, and that was a little more fringe. You let them kind of say their piece, and you got a lot of downloads. Do you particularly think there's a problem with that?
Not really.
Uh-huh.
It just means the people have, you know, a lot of people following them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's basically what I think. I think what would be wrong is if they go way out there and I'm way out there with them.
And that would just be just you personally. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the way I kind of am similar to you in that I kind of feel like, you know, all I'm doing is presenting the information and facilitating in that. And, you know, I think it's fair that everybody have various opinions and that everybody be civil with each other. But I've said it before, and what people don't realize is there's a lot of the people I have on who I don't agree with, maybe even the majority, but you'll never know that. And people I doubt would even be able to go back and listen and find who I agreed with and who I didn't, but which hopefully they can't. But I think that's okay. I mean, it's okay to have a bunch of opinions. And like you said before, none of us have all the answers.
That's right. Yeah. And the ones that do, run.
Yeah. When it comes to researchers, like, you know, which one have you, What do you think resonates with you the best as far as what you're learning seems to be closest to what you feel is going on? Tough one.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Just because of the complete variety. Are you talking about the actual events of UFOs coming here?
Or maybe just a researcher who has it down. Yeah, either way, what is one where you think back? Because I certainly do that. This is a person who I think, you know, when people ask, you should read about this person or you should check this person's stuff out. Besides me, because you probably usually...
Oh, yes. It was you all along. Yeah. Well, you know, this the old standby, Stan Friedman, you know, he always has... you know, a pretty solid argument. You know, I'm getting a real kick out of these certain people that are just getting into it and just exploring it. For instance, Dr. Alex Wendt that we listened to at the symposium.
Oh, yeah.
He really made a lot of sense. And his he had great arguments for skeptics as well. And so just hearing, like, you know, I guess you probably get these emails that some listeners are tired of hearing the same people over and over, and they want to hear someone new. And I think that's what I try to do, is I do try to get people that have not been heard before on the show.
Right.
But with that, it seems like, you know, I certainly get less downloads from those people, but I do get some email from listeners that do appreciate new people. Getting back to your question.
Reluctantly. Like,
yeah. There's a lot of people that, you know, I've had on, they don't really, they talk about the phenomena, but they don't really have the answers. It's just like, are you familiar with a gentleman in Sweden called Klaus Svahn?
I've heard the name, and does this have to do with the Hezbollah lights or something like that?
Well,
maybe not.
He was doing some research on the ghost rockets way back when, but they just have a real, almost an agnostic way of researching, and I really enjoyed speaking with him. They really take a real solid look at it. Now, he does interviews all over the country all year long, and he says that he's only been ridiculed once.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's just the way they approach it, very in a very solid way, and he's very interesting.
You know, a lot of countries will brag about that, about, oh, we don't make fun of it here, and we are much more serious about it here. And it used to just annoy me. But now I find, I mean, it really is a case. That's what's fun. Like in North Carolina, when we were there, it was a symposium by the Center for UFO Research, and they had a lot of credible people, including representatives from official UFO investigation organizations. And they shared that in France, people made fun of it a little more like out here. But in some countries, like South American countries, they're, the whole population is very serious about the topic. It's very refreshing.
It is. That was such a great show to watch. All those great people talk. You know, Leslie Kane, who you and I both know, I've always enjoyed having her on the show for sure. She's just great, and I love her approach. And there's another lady I had on my podcast named Chase Klotsky. Are you familiar with her?
I know the name, but I've never spoken with her.
Very, very good. Very interesting. And great story. You got to get her on your show. Yeah. So, you know, and of course, Robert Hastings, who I mentioned previously, you know, he's going to be on my next, in a week from now, my podcast.
So I see a pattern emerging here.
Uh-oh.
So you're talking about Hastings and Kane and... Alexander Wendt, which is really neat, but so it seems as though, and you've mentioned the importance of the agnosticism, so I wanted to kind of talk about Alexander Wendt and his idea of this militant agnosticism And it sounds like you feel that is important, being agnostic. Why is that, and what does that mean to you?
Well, basically, the way I look at it is the philosophy that I have about it is not to go off the deep end about what something is and focus on, you know, the part of researching it instead of just saying that, you know, they're from another star system or something like that. So, you know, as we're just going along, we don't really understand what is going on. I just don't think it's a good idea to jump to any conclusions and to look at all aspects. And, you know, there's what, maybe 10% of all sightings are unexplainable, maybe higher than that. But still, you know, to try to find out the explanation, I think is, you know, very important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to go through all the different things it could have been that, you know, what type of anomaly or something like that, you know, instead of just jumping to conclusions. I think that's where people make mistakes. So I guess that's what I would say, you know, my philosophy is on on the subject.
Would you say, in your experience now, that the majority of this field does not hold to that kind of rigor that you're talking to about?
Yeah, I would say there's a good portion that does not.
And why do you think that's the case?
I think there's a lot of things involved. I think that, you know, some people look at this field as possibly a cash cow, and how can I make money? You know, what can I do as far as speaking or writing? There's some people that look at it that way. And there's some people that just explore one subject, let's say on the fringe side, and they just go with it and stick to their guns and move along like that. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you're answering it now. So, but what about the people who, you know, kind of subscribe to that or follow those people? Why do you think they do that?
That's a good question. And, you know, you probably have a lot of people that listen to your show that follow Dr. Greer. And, you know, that's, to me, that's an example of someone that has a large amount of followers. That's, you know, I don't really like talking bad about anyone, but, you know, he's not really putting anything on the table. He is, can I say, I feel that Greer is sort of almost like a cult leader in a way. I kind of get that. And he's not, you know, everyone was waiting for this movie to come out, and, you know, he had this answer to free energy and, you know, the little Atacama body and all that. And, you know, it just, it was all window dressing. There's, you know, the movie was a big letdown. It was hard to watch, actually, I believe. And there's people like him out there that are just looking, in my opinion, for some type of fame and money.
See, and this is interesting because I usually don't go here where I don't really get critical of individuals in particular. But you know what? I'm going to go there. And with this particular situation, I guess I don't feel as bad just because, emailed, with back and forth their scientist on this Atacama thing. And
are you talking about the gentleman at Stanford University?
Yeah, Dr. Nolan.
Yes, I actually had a little, email thing going with him as well.
Yeah. So, you know, everything I was getting is directly from him. And then, of course, he was speaking with others as well. And that's where I felt a little like you do, in that there's certainly, at the very least, some disingenuous information being put forth, because The DNA expert was very clear. I'm not the one who put any words in his mouth. You didn't. No, the science magazines that he talked to didn't. He said this thing is human in his professional opinion. When you hire an expert to make a determination for you, you either reject that expert's opinion and go to for other experts, or you accept his opinion and you move forward. Mostly you do the latter because they're the expert. And that's what was frustrating, in that his, Dr. Nolan's words being parsed by Dr. Stephen Greer. I don't think that is right for him to do that. He is not a DNA expert, and he should not try to purport himself to be. And then they get frustrated. You know, we had some little rough times with some of the people that produced their movie because of our opinions about some of this stuff. And that's disingenuous, I think, when you do that, when you try to – they're obviously, because it's an extraterrestrial movie, trying to kind of milk this idea that that's what's going on there, when they're experts and their science is – coming to that conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of putting the cart before the horse in that whole situation. You know, before it should have even been in any film, you know, they should have done the DNA test. This is my opinion, of course.
No, that's great. I mean, I did an interview with Lee Spiegel where he said something very similar.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you just, it's just another example of what I'm talking about as someone going there. You know, going way out.
But it's also an example of what you talked about earlier, of how when you have a more fringe show, you have some downloads. It's also an example where, you know, like my interview with him, last one, has gotten a lot of downloads. He's popular in the circles that we work in.
Yes.
And do you have any opinions as to why that happens?
I think that a lot of people just want to believe in something. Mm. And when someone actually claims that they have an idea, that they know what's going on, I think people actually gravitate to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's, you know, I'm sure you get these emails, I get them all the time, that people who have had sightings will write me and they'll just say, you know, I just want to know the answer, you know, and... Mm-hmm. So when someone claims to have the answer, you know, and that's kind of why I went there, as far as saying he's kind of a cult leader. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
People will follow someone that they think is going to lead them to an answer.
It's really funny you say that, too, because certainly there are a lot of people who will say, you know, what's going on with this? And when you essentially give them an answer, well, here's some people who have some ideas, here's some good evidence, but we don't know, that once in a while you get someone who's upset, they get frustrated.
Yeah.
There's not an answer, and it's like, I know, we don't have an answer. But, of course, if I would have said, oh, I've got all the answers, it's X, Y, Z, they would have been, oh, great, thanks.
One thing at the symposium that I really enjoyed was a gentleman's question from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, it appears to me that you people have been at this for a long time and you put so much effort into it trying to figure out, and you don't have any answers. How do you keep going? What makes you keep going? And I thought that was an excellent question.
Yeah, it was. And what would be your answer to that question?
You know, I like the mystery, but I like the idea of trying to figure out what the answers are.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that I ever will. I don't know if, you know, in my lifetime we'll ever know anything. You know, people have been saying that exact phrase since probably 1947.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they think, well, I hope I find out in my lifetime. It's very possible that I won't ever find out.
Right.
But, you know, just to do my little part in asking the questions is very interesting.
Yeah.
To me.
It's funny because when I talk to the researchers who have been in this for decades, they're kind of the same. It's like they now think, oh, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to find anything out before I'm gone. But and some of these researchers I'm referring to are gone. But they talked about how, you know, at first they thought, oh, okay, the Blue Book, they're looking into this. We're going to get all the answers. Finally, they're going to share this with us. Didn't happen. Then Condon Report comes around. Oh, they're finally doing a study. They're going to let us know what's going on. That doesn't happen. Then Carter comes around, and Carter says, I'm going to look into it and tell everybody. And there was, I don't know if people realize this, but people really felt that Carter was going to release the information. He was seeking to get NASA to do research, and it was a big deal in the media. In fact, I have an interview with Steven Spielberg talking about it. Oh, we're going to know next year because Carter's going to tell us. But that doesn't happen. So these cycles of where people get excited, so you can see these old-timers who have been in it for a while get so cynical and then, ah, we're never finding out. You know, they can't get excited about anything. And I feel myself kind of going there. But, yeah, I know what you mean.
And then the government, you know, there's always talk, well, does the government know? Do they know? Don't they know? What do they know? Does a part of the government know? And but, you know, so many sightings, there's like F-16s or something, you know, chasing after something. And to me, that would still say, no, they don't really know. So I don't, you know, it's another, it's almost as baffling as the whole subject, whether
right.
the government knows anything or not.
Right. You know, and even in exploring what we think we know and finding out we don't really know what we think we know, it's moving somewhere, I think, because at least we're not spending our efforts on that anymore because we know that that isn't what's going on.
Right. Well, I look at it this way. You know, 99.5% of all the people out there are, you know, getting up in the morning, going to work, and they're thinking about things just around their immediate self.
Mm-hmm.
And never thinking about what's up in the sky or what's going on until, you know, perhaps they have a sighting. You know, that might change their thoughts. I was always interested in astronomy a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I was always looking up in the sky and wondering about things. But, you know, most people really don't care. If it's not going to affect their day-to-day life, then they're not going to look into this or care to look into it or care if anyone else looks into it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no real... there's no real push for, you know, the disclosure or anything like that because, you know, 99% of the people really don't care. I really believe that.
I think you're right, too, in that, you know, people are always talking about – that's why I like the podcast kind of idea or online because I think people will do that but may physically get up and go to a conference. That's kind of asking more or even physically get out and do some investigation. That's even asking, you know, more, which people aren't willing to do, but at least they'll go look at some information so we could provide that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With the coworkers who you said kind of made fun of you or some of your other colleagues, did you ever come across a time where maybe one of them didn't make fun of you and said, hey,
I've got a story for you. I've got a great story for you. All right. So I work with a guy in the antiques field currently. And, you know, I basically said, well, you know, he's on the internet all the time. He's going to see my name under the antique podcast. And then he's going to see my name under the UFO podcast eventually. You know, I know it's going to happen. So we were getting ready to go to lunch. And I said, well, I just want to let you know I do a show on UFOs. Go ahead. You know, say what you want to say. And so he looks at me and he said, oh, well, I saw one. So I don't, you know, I'm not going to give you a hard time. So I go, really, you know, tell me about it. So he was just so matter-of-factly. Now, he was at Amherst College in Massachusetts, and it's kind of around mountains. And there's actually a lot of sightings there. I looked online. So all of a sudden this, like, light came. He was on the 21st floor of their dorms, which is a real tall building.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden this light came shooting down, and there was five of them in the room, and they're all watching. It comes down to about the 15th floor, down through the mall, and it just hovers. And he says, he looks at it, and there's lights all around. He says, a square, just like a box. And they're watching, it's doing nothing, and all of a sudden he said it just shot up at an angle right up over the mountains, which weren't too far away, and just stopped right there. And then he said all of a sudden the box-shaped craft or whatever it was burst into about seven or eight lights. It just, he said, just like it exploded, and then the seven lights made a formation. And then he said the lights started signaling back, like they're signaling back and forth to each other. They heard a jet noise, and they watched two jets go right toward it, and the thing shot off at an angle. He said, fastest thing he's ever seen in his life. And then they gave up chase and came back around. So he's telling me this incredible, what I think is an incredible story. And so I say to him, what happened? You know, well, what'd you do? And he said, well, the next day we looked in the paper. He said there was nothing in the paper. So I go, well, it must have changed your life. And he goes, I could care less. I just said, what? He said, I could care less. I said, you don't even think about it? He said, nope, never even. He goes, I haven't thought about it for years. I could care less.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I think his reaction is just as bizarre as the sighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can kind of see it personally, which is funny because, you know, I'm in this field. But it's funny because a lot of people will, I've had people say, well, if he didn't care, then he didn't see that. Because if he really saw that, he'd be freaked out. But there are some people who are like that. They just are like, blah, big deal.
Well, knowing this guy like I do, we share an office together. That is totally his attitude about everything. You know, so it fits. It fits for him.
Mm-hmm. Someone like him, does he really think about, you know, the nature of where we come from? Does he have many existential thoughts or something like that?
We've talked about, you know, before I knew he had this experience, and we talked several times about the Kepler satellite and the, you know, the possible Earth-like planets and things like that. So he does have some type of interest, but, you know, it doesn't really let it too much affect his life in any given way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's an example of a lot of people, I'm sure, out there that are like this.
Yeah.
So not everybody's going to be as interested.
That's right.
Yeah, that's really strange. Has he been like the only one you've ran across so far?
Oh, no. I mean, you know, someone that I worked with.
Yeah.
You know, I've had, you know, family members that have had sightings and other friends. And as a matter of fact, you know, going back to the antique business, over the years, I've been doing a lot of business with a gentleman who's an auctioneer. And, you know, we talk, I don't know, once or twice a month about certain things. He needs, you know, ideas about what something's worth or something like that. Well, all of a sudden, one night, I get a text from him, and I look down, and he goes, UFO podcast, awesome. So I called him up, and he said when he was 17, he had a, you know, a major sighting with four friends walking along the street, and this thing hovered right over them. And they looked up at it, and they got this real, really bad feeling inside. You know, he said, I can't describe it any other way. And he says, I've been exploring this thing ever since. So, yeah, that's kind of fun. And there's another television personality I was working with that has her own show, her own TV show. And we were working a booth together and talking and chatting and all that. And then she whispers in my ear, said, we have something in common. And I said, what's that? She goes, UFOs.
Really?
Like,
wow.
You got to be kidding me. So she said she'd be on my show at some point, but she said she'd have to disguise her voice. She doesn't want anyone to know.
Really? Did you talk much else about the topic?
Oh, yes. She was telling me about her two sightings. She had one in her backyard and one when she was in Las Vegas, of all places.
Wow, interesting.
And the funny thing is they were both triangles.
Wow. So you're going to name the guy that you're critical of, but you're not going to name these two people who had these incredible sightings.
Yeah, I guess that's
it adds mystery.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting. And so do you think that, you know, there's possibly a lot more people out there like that than we know, just kind of blasé about the whole thing.
I do. You know, I had a conversation with Israel Curiel, the MUFON North Carolina, at the symposium we were at. And, you know, he thinks the number is extremely high. He thinks the number of people who have cited and reported is only 1%. You know, I don't know what it is, but, you know, I'm sure there are, I'm sure it could be 50% of the people, you know, don't report. I mean, I didn't report my sighting,
right,
so to speak. You know, I just called the police department. That's as far as I went. So I think, you know, I think there are a lot of people out there. And his theory on that was just ask a relative. Ask your relatives if they've seen anything.
Ask a MUFON member. Because that's what's one thing that's hilarious, you know, working with them for so long, is that a lot of them who have sightings don't report them. I used to be shocked because I think you can find all of my sightings on there, but a lot of them, they come, oh, I had a sighting last week. Oh, great. Did you write it up? No.
This is someone that works with MUFON?
Yeah, happens all the time. I'll bet you, in fact, I think Israel's right, and it maybe somewhere between 1 and 5%, I agree with him. And when it comes to MUFON, people in MUFON, I bet they only report 50% of their sightings.
That's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
So if you really take that number and then there's 30,000 reported, you know, that would grow a lot.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, the unexplained, we always have to say are a small part of that.
Sure.
And one thing I've brought up on my show lately that bothers me a lot is the Chinese lanterns. They're making it tougher and tougher for people to know what's what out there.
Well, it gets harder all the time with Chinese lanterns and then all the drones and the apps and the LEDs on remote controlled planes and LEDs on kites. Technology is...
Yeah.
Even more so, you would think technology would help in this field, but it's almost hurting it more than anything.
Right. Absolutely.
So you talked about Seth Shostak setting that bar just essentially ridiculously too high. But where do you feel it's fair to set that bar? What are your philosophies around kind of that area? I mean, because they talk about science, what about, you know, that you don't have scientific evidence. Is that necessary?
Well, I don't think it's necessary to the point that there's definitely something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that people are seeing. So I don't think it's necessary for that. It's on radar tapes, you know, 10,000, you know, witnesses, you know, when you get some mass sightings like the Phoenix Lights or something like that. You know, maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 witnesses. But still, you know, all those people saw something.
Right.
So one of the things he argued was that eyewitnesses don't even hold up in a murder case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't work in court. You know, and so, you know, we rely on our vision more than anything else. And it's, you know, for me to hear that that doesn't mean anything, you know, I mean, I'm telling you what, I mean, if you were to tell me that I saw some type of natural anomaly or, you know, a military craft or a balloon or something like that, no, I'm not going to believe that at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the old term, I know what I saw, you know, and
right.
It certainly wasn't, I don't know if it was from this earth, but I doubt it.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, I mean, really, I mean, his bar is kind of even higher than, I'm sure, what he sets for himself. And it kind of makes his job impossible as well.
Yeah, and then, you know, I always got a kick out of the fact that there's so much money spent on, you know, the Higgs boson, on dark matter, dark energy, the things that, you know, are so evasive as well. But there's so much effort put into something like that, and mm-hmm. and you know, zero effort put into this phenomenon.
Right. Yeah.
It puzzles me.
It is minuscule, and it is puzzling. For you and your show, what is your goal with the show?
Well, I can't always stay this way, but I do like the sort of the scientific side, you know, to kind of explore that as much as possible. So I guess the goal is to bring, you know, a good quality show to someone that wants to listen with some interesting guests that all have, you know, different opinions on what's going on and, you know, where things are moving.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I would say my most important goal is just to keep my show interesting.
Yeah.
And I really do like having, you know, new people on, unheard people, because that really does, you know, bring more to it.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. My main focus is definitely bringing on new and different people, which is much bigger priority than someone who might be popular.
Mm-hmm.
Who people hear all the time.
Right, right.
So what is the end game? I mean, do you hope that your show inspires something, or with this field, where do you hope it moves towards? Do you really want this? Are you pushing for disclosure, or what are you looking towards?
Well, I don't want to sound like a pessimist, but I really don't think there's going to be any disclosure. I don't mm-hmm. think that's going to happen. So if I were to say moving towards something is, you know, I have people that come onto the forum and I had someone write me recently that said I gave them a new lease on life. You know, just they like listening to the shows. You know, it's basically someone just out there looking for answers. You know, not that they'll find them, but I think there's sort of like a comfort that we can, you know, you can give and I can give that, you know, someone's actually exploring this and trying to find answers.
Yeah, comfort's good. It's a virtual hug we're giving people, huh?
That's it.
Yeah, because we can't be there in person.
Right, right. And, you know, some people are horrified. You know that. You know,
yeah.
People write me that, you know, this poor girl in Australia, she was...
Oh, right.
In a field with her mother, and a triangle came over, and they were forced to the ground with pressure. And, you know,
wow.
She's like panicking, you know, I want answers, you know, and, you know, you just try to do what you can to comfort them and
yeah.
just say, hey, look, you know, a lot of people have experienced similar things.
Yeah. And, you know, it kind of comes back to the emails you talk about when people were asking for answers, and I made light of it because some people are kind of like that, real frivolous in it. But some people, like these people, really want you to tell them something to comfort them for this incident that took place. And it's always hard because you can't do much except for say, I've been in this for a while and the most I can tell you is X, Y, and Z, but there's not much more we can do. There's not like a government agency we can go talk to or aid you can go seek or unfortunately anybody official who's going to care about what you have to say, but at least we can listen.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I have an uncle that is in AA, if I can say that, I guess I can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but he finds comfort in talking with people that have, you know, a like situation, a like life, even though it's struggling and all that, but it really, he's really changed. He's really, you know, come a long way with the help of these people. And I think that's kind of what, you know, I think that's kind of what happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, actually for PTSD, that's the number one therapy is talk therapy, which is essentially just talking out the issue.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that makes a lot of sense. So then I guess that's all, just to share information. But I kind of feel similar because it's kind of, you know, I've thought of the worst-case scenario, which is where you're at in all of this. The worst-case scenario, it doesn't really go anywhere, but at least we're able to share information. And I'm cool with that. I mean, because we can't be sure of anything else happening.
Yeah, what's the alternative?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's better to just be comfortable with that.
Yeah.
So do you feel what motivates you then to continue if you have that kind of pessimistic view?
Yeah. Just basically what we're talking about. You know, I love opening an email where someone says, oh, you know, I just found your show and, you know, I'm really enjoying, you know, listening to it, and you don't go too far out there or whatever. You know, it's just, I think what keeps me going is that, and also speaking with intelligent people that have great stories and ideas and things. To me, it's exciting. You know, sometimes I put more work into this podcast than I do in my actual job, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that keeps me going. I'm fascinated by the mystery. I'm intrigued by the people and hopeful that, you know, some answers will be found. I'm not pushing for disclosure. I'm just, because I don't really think, or I should say that I'm not really sure if the government could even disclose anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the most they know is that they don't know.
Right. Well, I think we've ran out of our time, and it was very nice talking to you. I think that we share a very similar perspective on all of this. It's always refreshing to talk to someone new who's getting involved with all of this stuff and having a new buddy in the field.
Awesome. Well, it's been a real pleasure.
All right. And they can go to podcastufo.com and go listen to all your shows, right?
That's right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks a lot, Alejandro.
All right. Thank you so much, Martin, for being on the show. He's a very cool guy, and it was a lot of fun to talk to him. You could go to podcastufo.com to hear more of his interviews at podcastufo. And he's got a lot of great stuff there, so he's a lot of fun. I also want to remind you to go to our YouTube channel for the latest videos. We've got one on the Canadian UFO files lately, and of course, we biweekly now have a spacing out, and there's a new spacing out up there. And like I talked about, Maureen and Jason went and did some interviews with some guys in some bands and talking about UFOs. They had some really interesting stories too, and you'll be able to see that on the latest edition of Spacing Out. And before we go, I also want to thank the guys who do the music for the show. So I want to thank Caleb Hanks for the opening music and Two Earth Minutes for the close. Again, don't forget to go to openminds.tv. Oh yeah, I want to remind you about the magazine, because we have some really neat stories in that, and that's going to be coming out soon. So check the bookstores. Or, in fact, Jason wrote a story on Gulf Breeze. That's really cool. But if you want to get caught up on that. Or, of course, go to openminds.tv to get a subscription. They're really cheap, and then you can get them straight to your door, and you don't have to worry about finding them at the bookstore. The ones at the bookstore, you'll go and you'll buy for your friends and family, which you're doing, right? You better be, you turkeys. Anyway, you guys have a great week, and we'll either be talking to you next week or the week after. Thank you so much for listening. Adios, muchachos.